little kid that you see at the campaigns that's running around messing up all the papers? Like, that was me. I was that kid.
Right. Kind of help you right. Do it out. Like,
I was that kid. I was that kid that was at the meetings at 7 and 8 o'clock at night, that was in the back making noise, you know, playing in water cups.
And then one day they were like, honey, you need to come in the main room.
Right. So, you know, never push your kids out because you don't know what they're listening to and hearing and what they may become. But it that's what it looked like.
I'm Lauren Schiller. That's Heather McTeer-Tony, the National Field Director at Moms Clean Air Force, which fights for climate safety to protect our children's health.
So I served as mayor of Greenville, Mississippi from 2004 to 2012. I had 2 terms there. And then I served as the regional administrator for EPA in the Southeast under the Obama administration and did that until 2017. At the end of the administration, I had a new baby. I was going to take some time off and really get into how do we come back? You know, how do we really engage in climate and what can I do based upon the experience that I've had in my career in politics and talking about environmental justice issues. There came an opportunity with Moms Clean Air Force to put together some programming. And I said, hey, would love to work with moms, would think this is a great fit, especially since I had a new baby at home. And I was very familiar with the work of Moms Clean Air Force through their engagement with EPA. And I've been now with Moms as the National Field Director for a year.
This is Inflection Point, with stories of how women rise up. We'll hear how Heather went from being that little kid messing up the papers at activist meetings to protecting little kids. She shares how her 2 terms as the first African-American, first female, and youngest mayor of Greenville, Mississippi helps her be an even more effective activist, and what one thing motivates people to make big changes. We'll be right back. We're back with Heather McTeer-Tony.
Well, I've been talking with women over the season about getting more women in office, getting more women of color in office. So what inspired you to run for the office of mayor at the age of, well, you were probably younger than 27 right. When you started running.
So I was running at 27.
Okay.
And then I had a birthday. And so I think I was in 28 when I was inaugurated. What inspired me was the people that I live with. And my parents were and still are social justice activists. That's how I phrase them. My father is a retired civil rights attorney and excellent attorney in his own right. My mother is a retired teacher who owned her own business. And so between the two of them, just this idea of social justice as a way of life is how I was raised. And my parents always made sure that both my brother and I understood that we were a part of a larger community. So there wasn't any elevation of you're better than or you're lower than. These are family members. This is who you serve with. And to be a true servant, you serve with people and you serve people. And that was how I was raised. I was raised in a church, servant leader. And it seemed very natural to me that the way I would serve my community after having been well-educated, I had a law degree, was to come home and do that service for people. I would be serving my Sunday school teacher and my band directors, you know, and that's really was my inspiration because I think so many young people, particularly when people of color, tend to leave home to go off and find the next big great thing. And we all, you know, have that adventurous part of our lives where we want to go off and do well, but we could do well coming to our home places and our home states. And it's one of the reasons why I'm very happy that I still live in the state of Mississippi.
I am curious, as a mom, mm-hmm. and, you know, and we're going to talk more about being a mom and being an activist, how that social justice life manifested itself. Like, what did that actually look like on a daily basis during the week or on the weekend?
Yeah, you know, it was when my dad was out and participating in a march. My brother and I were there, too. We may not have been as cognizant about the importance of it at the time. I have seen pictures of myself in my Sunday best on the front lines of a rally or a march, and I'm positive that I was enjoying playing or being around other friends, but I was participating in social justice, you know? So that's what it looked like in our house. That's what it looks like in my house now.
Yeah.
Which I love. You know, my kids are a part of events that we do with Mom's Clean Air Force, and they have their shirts that they put on. And, you know, I hear the whining of, oh, do we have to go? Yes. Yes, you have to go.
How old are they?
They're 3 and 13
now. Okay.
My 13-year-old, this past year at this year's play-in, we do an annual play-in for climate activism in Washington, D.C. every year. And so this is her third year going. And this year she did her first television interview. And I was so impressed because I know she had been watching. She's always around. But she tends to be the shy type, like, I don't know, I don't want to do this. And then all of a sudden, I look up and here's my daughter doing this television interview with the local news station. And she's talking so beautifully about why we're here. And so as I'm, you know, rushing as the mom to get pictures, I saw exactly what was happening to her, which was the same thing that happened to me. You know, you're around it so much that it comes out of you in ways sometimes that you can't expect. So it was one of those, you know, teary moments like, oh, my God, that's my baby. And at the same time, being extremely proud. And I understood, I think, in that moment how my parents felt about me.
Yes. Well, we're at the point now. I mean, I feel like we go on a march like every other week, it feels like, which is, I mean, great, but also just terrible that we even have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're now at the point where my daughter is saying to me, well, I'm taking the day off of school to go on this climate strike, you know, or I want to go to the Pride March, you know, and take, like, she is now taking, well, I've got two daughters and they're both taking the lead. They're telling me where to be and when.
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
Is we look to our children to understand the direction of their concerns and interests, and their concerns and interests become our concerns and interests. And I think it goes both ways. When I was in high school, I think high school going into college, I remember two big things that young people were concerned about. One, I remember the day that the Rodney King verdict came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 1992. I was a junior in high school, and there was all of this anger. But like, what do you do? So, and you see some parts of the country, people were rioting and they were active. Young people were, and then you saw in other parts of the country where there was a different response. And I recall saying to myself, like, how do I feel about this? And having that conversation with my parents about how do I feel, and then what do I do? You know, having to have real conversations about real issues. And I raise that because, you know, in today's society, our young people are seeing very similar types of issues. And that's inclusive of climate. It's inclusive of immigration. It's inclusive of gun violence. And we have to have conversations with them because they want to do something. They want to be active. And they're seeking our guidance on how to do it. And then they're making their own decisions. Like your daughter said, hey, I'm going to strike on Friday. And it's not because I just want a day off of school. It's mm-hmm. because I'm going to do Facebook posts to show that I'm socially active. I'm going to tweet and Snapchat at all of my friends to say that I'm here because I want to see climate activism. It's in their own way. Mm-hmm. And we are learning to speak their language and to be social justice advocates like them.
So what can you tell me about the play-in?
Yes.
I love that. I like the best, like, who wouldn't want to go to a play-in?
Right? So we have an annual play-in for climate action every July or around June, late June, July, that is in Washington, D.C. And you know what a sit-in is, right? People have heard of sit-ins.
Yes.
So instead of a sit-in, we have a play-in where we bring our kids and they are on the Capitol little lawn. They're playing, they're having activities. We're talking about climate justice. We're talking about air pollution. We're talking about the things that we need to protect our children from in the environment. And then we go to Capitol Hill. And we go to visit our members of Congress, and we go to tell them these are our concerns and demand action and to be very specific about what our requests are. So the morning is playing, and then the afternoon we're on the Hill. And when I tell you it is a bundle of fun, there is nothing like seeing 200 kids running around as butterflies and in hula hoops and with parachutes and, you know, singing songs to Mr. G, who is a climate, he is a climate singer. He and his lovely wife, Miss G, they come every year and they sing songs with the kids. But it's just such a beautiful display of why we're doing this. Yeah. And how important it is. And this year, it was just as wonderful, if not more so, than it has been in the past. Walking up and down those halls of Congress, and people say, "Oh, I see moms coming. I see moms. I know moms." You know, members of Congress want to stop and take selfies with our kids and with us. And then they promise us, "I'm going to do something on this climate action," because they know that we're serious. Even for members of Congress, I think, that aren't as enthused about the same type of climate action that we want, respect our organization, because we say that we are mompartisan. So it doesn't make a difference if you're Republican or Democrat, Tea Party, liberal, conservative. That doesn't matter. We're mompartisan. So we want to know that all of our members of Congress are doing the things that are helpful and healthy to our children. And that has been a wonderful journey. I can tell you, I have my my son, who is now 3. He went this year. He has been every year. So for 3 years, he has gone. As soon as he started walking, when it got into one of those offices, and maybe it may not have been the climate friendliest office, it's like, hey, we can do this the easy way. And we can have a meeting. Or I can just let him go in your office.
With a puppy and a cup of espresso, right, like they say.
Right, right. But it's, you know, it's all in the fun. It's all in the fun. And our members are so well-versed in this work. I am impressed every time I see them on the Hill or in a EPA hearing, and they come with the science, they come with the stories, and they come with the impacts and demands that you just cannot argue against. So it just makes these events like the play-in that much more influential. It's because we're there with our children, but we also know what we're talking about.
One of the things that I'm really interested in understanding is something you mentioned earlier, which is the moms and mayors, mm-hmm. and how activist organizations and politicians can work together to move things forward.
Yes.
And, you know, so you talked about entering the halls of Congress and, you know, letting letting the little kids fly as one methodology.
Right.
But how does that dynamic work in terms of, you know, I would imagine that what you want is always going to be more than what a politician is necessarily going to either want to give you or be able to give you. Right. So how does that push and pull, how do you see that push and pull working most effectively?
Oh, that's an excellent question, and one that I see from two sides, because I was that elected official. You've
yes.
been that politician who's been in a space where you've got to negotiate. And now being on the side of, and I even hate to say the side, because it's more aligned with understanding negotiating power. And I think as moms, we have a better way of doing that than most. And as women, just quite frankly, because we have a sense of convening people and getting people to come to the table and getting them to say, you know, come play nicely together. If we don't do anything else, just come sit down so that we can see one another, that we're all human beings, that we all have some things in common, yeah. and that we can at least have a conversation. Just the ability to get people to the table and listen is vitally important at this day and age. And we encourage our mothers to do that as a beginning step. So if it's local engagement, which has skyrocketed in this administration where there have been a number of rollbacks to critical environmental regulations and standards, people are turning locally to their local mayors and their state government to look for some type of action. And mothers are extraordinarily well equipped to be in those spaces locally to say, let's have a conversation. We also encourage them to ask to be appointed to some of these boards and commissions where decisions are being made. You know, you don't always have to run for office. There are a number of seats on boards locally that are always open, and they're looking for good people that they can have to talk through policy and make these decisions. So we encourage them, our moms, and our friends and allies, hey, go ask your local mayor if there's a seat on the sustainability board that maybe you can sit on, or when the planning commission is coming up, or what are some places where you can have a be a part of the panel to talk about a climate action plan, so that it's not always phrased as this push and pull, but more of a, I want to come and be a part of the team that's going to make these decisions. Here I am, choose me. And I can tell you that as a mayor, you've got a bunch of seats. You know, there are always seats on something that need to be filled, if it's the planning commission or the park commission or a transportation board or something, somewhere. And it's more important now that we have sound-minded, reasonable people who can sit in these spaces and make decisions, keeping climate and environment at the forefront of their decision-making process. And so we encourage that.
So, okay, so just say I wanted to raise my hand to get appointed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an email? Do I need to get a meeting with the mayor? The mayor's assistant? Like, what, like, literally, how would one go about doing that?
Literally, one can send an email.
Pick me.
Right. One can simply sit down at their computer and say, dear Miss Mayor's office, I would like to be considered for a open board position. Could you please share a list of the positions that are open with me? I await hearing from you soon. Signed me.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Okay.
Just very, very simply, asking for the list is
yes.
the first step. And that can be done in an email. It can be done with a phone call to be directed to the place on the website. Because oftentimes it could be something as simple as an online application to find out what's open, what's available. Some cities have commissions on women. There are a number of organizations and opportunities for people to volunteer. And we encourage women and moms to think of their volunteer efforts outside the stereotypical scope that society wants to assign us to, i.e., go volunteer for the PTA or go volunteer, you know, for the cookie bake sale. No. You can go volunteer at the local county commissioner's office to be a part of the tree board. You know, that's volunteerism.
Yep.
And as we expand our scope of our involvement, it puts us in a better position to elevate climate and environmental issues to policymaking position.
I'll be right back with Heather McTeer-Tony. I hope you'll join our supporters and make a tax-deductible donation towards our production at inflectionpointradio.org. Just click that support button. I'm back with Heather McTeer-Tony. I guess we can all say we know what the state of our environment is right now. I mean, it, you know, unless you've been living under a rock, you can pretty much accept that we're at a crisis point, right? So, and, you know, organizations like Moms Clean Air Force have been aware of this for a very long time. We've been working to prevent it. But here we are. I mean, when you look at who and what is most affected and is really on the front lines of this environmental crisis that we are facing, who do you consider your constituency?
So our children across the board. And we're very clear that, you know, our focus is to protect children, all children, from the impacts of air pollution and climate. Now, that looks differently in different parts of the country. Just geographically, there are some places where there is focus. And also keeping in mind that vulnerable communities and communities of color have been left out of this conversation for so many years. We have this great opportunity to bring together mothers around this issue. And I've been so encouraged by our senior director. She's our co-founder, Dominique Browning. And when, you know, Dominique and I first started talking sort of about what are we going to look like for the next year or so, she was adamant about making sure that we represented diversity and inclusivity and were a true reflection of what mothers are dealing with across this country. I mean, she still is adamant about that. And it was really very, very different from what I'd seen in a number of other organizations, her commitment and willingness to push the envelope to make sure that we are elevating the voices of communities of color, giving them the microphone, not saying, you know, here, we're going to magnify it and we're going to speak for you. No, no, no. Actually identifying and bringing to the table and putting forth mothers in communities of color and in vulnerable populations so that they could speak their own stories. And we could really have this patchwork quilt of what our commitment and our love for all of our children look like. And that has turned over this past year into something that has been absolutely magnificent and splendid to look at. So we have an Eco Madres program, which really focuses on our Latina mothers. And, you know, they're able to pull together and talk in their communities in ways that I can't and in ways that Dominique can't. But they're coming together and bringing their voices and perspectives to this conversation that we hadn't thought of. I'll give you a great example. When the entire country was braced for ICE raids across certain states, our moms that were and are in Latino communities immediately put together a list of rights that any mother should know if they happen to be in a place where someone was subject to a raid. And they put this together so they could have it at their cafecitos, where mothers would come to talk about their climate issues. And it was an issue of safety, just to let moms know, I know we're here talking about climate, but we also know that this is on your mind. So we're going to let you know that as you're coming to us to talk about climate, we're here to talk to you and make sure that you're aware of your rights. That was a beautiful, beautiful pulling together of the things that are important to a mother in that community, identifying it, not hiding from it, not trying to elevate climate over anything else, but being aware and in the moment that this is what's concerning. And now in that space, let's talk about how we can work together on climate. The response we got back from that was amazing, because I think moms in the Latina community really respected the engagement there.
Yeah. Well, it also brings up the point of, you know, when there are so many other issues in front of us.
Right.
I mean, just the raids themselves. I mean, that is terrifying that you would have the mental space to also still be thinking about the environment and, you know, and our climate.
I don't even know what the question is. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, it gives me chills when I even think about it. Because I think I know there was one, we had one mother from out west who was undocumented and had been coming to these events to sort of learn more about climate. And she had such an amazing story. We wanted her to share it in Washington. And she made a decision that she would come. And she was in the process of being documented, so it was not something where she was not legal. She had an attorney. She was in this process, and this just happened to come sort of in between it. But she said that she had had a conversation with her attorney. She knew that she was at risk. She had identification, so she could board a flight. But it was more important for her to come and to talk in Washington about the devastating impacts of climate. And as a someone who was a climate migrant, that was more important for her children than her risk of, you know, of her freedom. That's powerful. You know, when you think about what people are willing to risk and put on the line for the sake of making sure that the message of how dire and how much of an emergency we're in, it takes the conversation to a space that, for me personally, says, I cannot give up this.
Yes.
You know, it's...
So what, yeah, I mean, yeah. Let's take a moment to just reflect on that.
Right.
I think that's actually is such an excellent point, because when we talk about climate and the way we've talked about climate in the past, mm-hmm. it's felt like this big thing that doesn't affect us on a day-to-day basis. It's this sort of other, I mean, I'm speaking not necessarily from my own perspective, but just from mm-hmm. the perspective of like, oh, climate, that's over there.
Right.
That's a problem to be dealt with later. We have other more pressing issues. Yes. And but could you talk about what it actually means? Like, you just mentioned climate migrant.
Yes.
But what it actually means, you know, in that example, and then just right, you know, in the states where you guys operate, like, what does it mean about where we are right now in terms of what is happening with our environment?
So I like to put it into two different buckets. There is your climate emergencies, crisis, extreme weather events that we're responding to, talking to moms about how to adapt and how to make sure our children are adapting. It's the proverbial tornado and fire drills that we do every day and our kids do every day at school. That part of our work is very important because it's constantly changing. And we know that we only have a certain amount of time before our temperature, global temperature, gets to the point where we are going to be subject to irreversible changes. And to the extent that we can make a big difference in that, we want to do that. And so that's one bucket. The other bucket, though, is I think of it more as like the bucket of hope, the bucket of things we're working on to ensure that our children have a solid and sound future. It is pushing for 100% clean energy. It is making sure that as we talk about climate solutions, we're talking about technology and innovative careers and how are we approaching the discussion about reducing our carbon emissions, and at the same time making sure that our kids are studying for the right things in the upcoming future, you know? And seeing the alignment. It's about job development and growth. It's about health and wellness. Someone said to me that they didn't think climate was a pocketbook issue. It's like, that's absolutely incorrect. Climate is a pocketbook issue because, you know, when a mother or a father or a grandmother has to take off work because their child has asthma attacks as a result of air pollution, that's hitting their pocketbook. Every single one of those emergency room visits, every single one of those asthma pumps, every time there's an EpiPen that's used is as a result of an allergic reaction that comes as a result of climate. These are pocketbook issues. As the price of food goes up because of the changes in our climate and what can and cannot be harvested, or as a result of our flooding that takes place and now grains cannot get from one part of the country to the other, that hits people's pocketbooks. And you know it when you go to the grocery store, and even after using the coupons, the price is more than what it was, you know, before. You feel it. Everybody feels it. So it is a pocketbook issue. And that's the side of it where we are working with our moms across the country to say, you know, we have to be on top of these solutions to climate as well, because they impact our health. They impact our children's future development and what they're going to do. They impact our job. They impact my electricity bill. Let's mm-hmm. just be very real about it. You know, these are everyday issues that we want to make sure we're a part of.
Yeah. So what, I mean, the pocketbook issue, I mean, is that what it takes? Does it for people to be motivated more urgently, you know, who aren't necessarily thinking about the long term, but who are thinking about it right now in their lives? I mean, is a pocketbook issue the issue that gets people's attention?
I think there are a lot of things that get people's attention. We live in a day and age where media really pushes a lot of the rhetoric about what moves us. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to it, it's I think of it as the things that relate to our five physical senses, because if you can feel it, taste it, smell it, see it, you know,
it must be it.
So when we start talking about the things that really impact us in our senses, then it's not I'm thinking about climate, in the future. I'm feeling climate right now, and I need to do something about it. That's how it now becomes an issue. I am feeling the fact that the weather has changed so drastically, and now my children need different clothes that, you know, can I not afford this if I am a person who maybe is thinking that climate is this far off thing. But as a mom, I need to make sure my babies have hats and gloves and coats. And if they're needing it now more often than not, there's a concern. As a mother, if I live in a place where we haven't had to have air conditioning in our schools, and therefore the schools aren't air conditioned, but now my child is sitting in a room that's 100 degrees, now this is something I'm feeling, as opposed to this is climate is a far off issue because school days are canceled because it's too hot. That's the type of thing that I think we keep raising these issues to say these things are happening repeatedly and there's something that we can do about it mm-hmm. and that we should be doing about it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so taking that feeling and intersecting it with the power to change it feels like that's the – I mean, what gets in the way? What gets in the way of, you know – the need mm-hmm. and the solution? I mean, what are the barriers?
So, you know, there's really not. There's not. I think it's a facade of a barrier because we don't talk to each other. Mm. If you look at mothers in different demographics and different communities, they're out there doing the work. They're on the front lines of it. But the voices aren't always ones that we hear. It's why, you know, we advocate for moms sitting on boards and commissions where decisions are being made. But the reality is moms have been pushing back and people of color have been pushing back on environmental issues for decades. So for a number of environmental justice groups, they're like, this is not new. We've been doing this work. There are women who have been in this field and this work longer than I have been alive. And I think of them often as the elders that I'm looking to seek and sit down and to talk to at the same time that I am sharing the message to say, It's a facade. It's not real, people. We're out here doing some work. Nobody's saying anything about it.
Yeah.
You know? So that's actually happening. And think of, I call her Mother McLean, Dr. Mildred McLean in Savannah, Georgia, who's been doing environmental justice work for years in Savannah, Georgia. And it has been on the cusp of really not just shifting like brownfields in her community, but making sure that people in the community are trained in areas like hazardous waste removal. Like, that's a job. It's an economic job. Well, they've been doing this work. This is nothing that's brand new. Nobody's just ever talked about it. I also think that it's important for us to not have this gone with the wind moment. That's what I call it, this gone with the wind moment.
What you mean by that.
So, right. It's this you know, the scene Gone with the Wind where you've got the Civil War is coming, you know, Atlanta's burning down, and at this point, there is no, the classes aren't going to matter because everybody's going to die. And it's just like, let me slap you in the face because let's get up and let's get moving. And I know a lot of women of color, you know, after the last election and the loss of Hillary Clinton, a lot of my white sisters were on the ground and they were sort of in this place of despair, like what is going to happen? And a lot of black women I know were just like, get up.
Yeah.
We don't have time for this. There is work to do. You cannot now afford to lay on the floor in a pity party and cry for 3 days because now we have a different issue and it's going to take all of us to do it together. And I feel like that is the space that we're at now with climate. It is a stop being in this space of despair. We have a clock. We know the countdown here in terms of our activity. And we know we also have some really great opportunities. So I cannot, in my good conscience, let you sit and wallow in all of the despair when I know we have this great opportunity to do positive things. We are doing positive things. It is a, come on, wake up. Let's go. And I try to stay in that space.
Yes. Okay, so back when I said, oh my gosh, there's so many marches. I mean, like, how did you not roll your eyes at me?
because we all get tired.
Let's go.
We all get tired, and you know, at some point in time, I think it is important that we have so many people that are involved that we can afford to take a break. Now, that's going to sound counterintuitive to everything that I just said, but let me submit this. As women, we have this way of thinking that we have to go 24/7 and use up all the minutes in the day and to do all of the things 7 days a week. And we are sacrificing ourselves on the altar of getting things done as opposed to ensuring that we have some self-care. And the more we have those periods of rest, the more that we understand we are in this together, that there's a team of people, the more we can get done. It is truly operating as a village of all of us so that you can go and take a nap this Saturday because I'm going to pick up your kids and we're going to go to the march because the kids want to go to the march, you know. And then next Saturday, you know, they're at your house. Y'all might march, you may not. You may just sit outside and draw pictures of marches, but I'm resting. And it could be as simple as that. It could be as simple as saying, I'm going to turn off my phone at 9 o'clock and put it somewhere else and take a moment to rest, because the rest is what rejuvenates us into being able to do the work. And it's also reflective of what has to be done. We want our earth to rest. We need to work on not taking so many resources out of the earth and give it a break. So how can we walk around and talk about giving the earth a break and we won't ourselves sit down? So, no, I was not going to roll my eyes, not rolling my eyes at all. I'm going to go take a break later on to do and amplify that very thing because self-care is so important. But it's also about sisterhood. It's about family. It's about community. And it's about showing the face of environmental work. And that includes a moment to rest.
Yes. All right. So what's the best advice that you've ever been given about how to bring people together around an issue that they all care about but are doing different work in different places?
Listen. I don't remember who told or taught me this, but I use this method of three meetings, and I've been doing it since I was in office, still do it to this day. But you got to have three meetings to listen. Especially if you're in a contentious situation where everybody's not on the same page, everybody's doing their own thing, and everybody thinks they're right. The first meeting is a vent session. It is a meeting where you're just going to go sit at a table and you're going to listen to everybody vent about how horrible things are, how wonderful things are that they're doing, and how all the other people just have no idea of why they're even there. So that's going to be the first meeting. And you really don't say anything at all. You just let people vent. The second meeting, there's going to be something happens. One, all the people who just wanted to vent, they're not going to come back because they've got their goal accomplished. You're going to have nosy people that come to that second meeting because they just want to come and see who's still coming and talking about this issue and to see what they're going to say. They're sort of like the lurkers and trying to figure out what they're going to do, but they're going to come. And then you're going to have people who are coming to see if, like, we're still going to do some work, right? So that's the second meeting. And you're starting to build and understand teams. And you come back to that meeting and you talk about what you learned from the first meeting, all the vent stuff. And then what are some options to go? The third meeting, though, that's the moneymaker. That's the one you really want. Because the people who come back to the third meeting are your committed workers. They're the ones who sat through all the ranting. They sat through all of the folks, you know, who could or could not be there. That's when you can sort of now dig down to the nitty gritty of, all right, guys, we got to figure out how to make this work together. It's that third meeting that's key. And the one that I always say is very, very valuable because I often try not to even talk until that third meeting. And you find out, you know, you may have some people who at the third meeting say, oh, I really wanted to come, but I couldn't. What can I do from home? Or I'm not able to be there. You know, you really find out who your workers are. That, I think, has been the best bit of advice because it requires me to put myself in a listening mode and listen deeply, not for a response, but only to hear what are the issues and concerns so that I can internalize them and then try to help people find some commonality.
That was Heather McTiertoni, the National Field Director for Moms Clean Air Force. We'll put a link to her organization for more ways to get involved on my website at inflectionpointradio.org. Check out Heather's toolkit on how to fight for climate safety and clean energy coming to the Inflection Point podcast feed. I'm Lauren Schiller. This is Inflection Point, and this is how women rise up. That's our Inflection Point for today. All of our episodes are on Apple Podcasts, Radio Public, Stitcher, Pandora, NPR One, all the places. Give us a 5-star review and subscribe to the podcast. Know a woman leading change we should talk to? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. While you're there, support our production with a tax-deductible monthly or one-time contribution. When women rise up, we all rise up. Just go to inflectionpointradio.org. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Inflection Point Radio. Follow us and join the Inflection Point Society, our Facebook group of everyday activists who seek to make extraordinary change through small daily actions. And follow me on Twitter at L.A. Schiller. To find out more about today's guest and to be in the loop with our email newsletter, you know where to go, inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced in partnership with KALW 91.7 FM in San Francisco and PRX. Our community manager is Alora Weaver. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.